You've heard all week thus far, of course, the Great Commission, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And this is the task that we're all about. We recognize that those of you that are here probably are more interested in mission work than the average person. And so in a sense, as I have heard at other lectures that have spoken on such subjects as this, I guess we're talking to the wrong people in a sense. But no, we're not, because we're encouraging those of us who want to do it. And hopefully it will encourage you, if you've never been to mission work, to think about Jamaica. Jamaica is a beautiful, beautiful land that is poverty-stricken. It is a place that you just fall in love with people, as I've already said. But they have so many hardships, and they have to deal with so many things that we really don't even fathom around here. And yet at the same time, as I've listened to these men talk about India in particular, what we have to deal with really is nothing compared to what they have to deal with. And I really am awed at the way that we Americans are spoiled. And notice I said we, because I'm just as spoiled. Lavinia tells me when I come back every year for about a month or two, I talk about when she complains about something around the house, well, I could get you a washboard instead of that washing machine. I could get you whatever. But then after a couple of months, I get back into the mode of the United States. I get spoiled again if I have not already or remain spoiled, and therefore I don't continue to think along that line. But you might ask, well, why go to Jamaica? Well, we'll talk about that in a moment, but before we do, think about Jamaica, the island, and her people. Jamaica is a beautiful, poverty-stricken nation of approximately 2.5 million people. One of three islands in the Northern Caribbean forming the Greater Antilles. She is the largest English-speaking country in the Caribbean Sea. It's a small island, really, because the length is 146 miles east to west, 22 miles at its narrowest and 51 miles at its widest. It is located 550 miles due north of the Panama Canal and 700 miles south of Miami, Florida. So it's very close, just past Cuba. We go over Cuba when we fly to Jamaica all the time. And so now, why pick Jamaica? Well, the first reason to pick Jamaica is the same reason these other men have picked other places to go. And it is because the gospel is needed. Sin is there. It is rampant there. And there are so many things that you could specify in regard to various types of sins. There's no need in doing that. But that's the main reason that we go to Jamaica. But I believe there are advantages. And this is where I really want to encourage you. Some of you may feel like you're too old to go to India and suffer the hardships for 3 months. You might not be able to go to Russia or to some of these other places that are so far away. But there are advantages to going to Jamaica. Some of you might have young people who are wanting to get into mission work, and you might feel, well, I don't want them to go that far and be gone that long. Well, these are some of the advantages that I'm going to mention this evening. We have the great advantage of people who are willing to study. Now, this can be said about any of these places, I'm sure. Not that many baptisms. We had 3 baptisms and 2 restorations this year, and that's not a whole lot of numbers. But I don't really honestly care much about the numbers. And the only reason I really concern myself, and the only reason that our team concerns ourselves with keeping records, is because that's what our brethren expect. And as hard as it is to raise money, even to go to Jamaica, for just 2 weeks out of the year, without those numbers, it would be almost impossible. But as I've already said, with us going and us teaching the truth and trying to help the brethren, trying to stir up the brethren there, trying to encourage them, it's a success. And though I want everybody to understand that, in a sense, it really doesn't matter whether they understand it as far as I'm concerned, because I know that God knows it's a success because we're doing those things. But one of the great advantages is that which was spoken of last hour, and that is they speak English. Now, some of you might be able to do what Richard was talking about and go in a year's time be able to learn another language, and thank God if you can. I'd say go ahead and do it. But I, for one, can't do that, and I say I can't, and people get aggravated when I say I can't, but I know where some limitations of mine are. I studied Greek in Memphis School of Preaching. That was the hardest class I've ever had in my life. And I could not do it. It was just one of those things I couldn't do. I took Spanish in college. It was the same thing. I studied English all my life, and I still butcher it to pieces. My point being, I don't have to go to India where there are all those dialects. There are other faithful brethren that are going over there. God bless them. I don't have to go to Russia. I can go to Jamaica, because they speak English. Now, I don't always understand them speaking English, because they mix it with Patois, which is their common language, their Indian dialect. And, well, it's just like I don't understand some people up here in the, well, y'all don't consider yourself North, up here in the North, when I grew up in Georgia and lived in Georgia and Alabama and that area all my life. Some of you don't understand me as well because of my way of speaking sometimes. But there is English anyway, and we do understand each other quite well, and so that's an advantage. Another advantage of going to Jamaica is an economical mission program. I don't know how much it costs to go to other places, but this year it cost us $1,300 apiece to go to Jamaica, and that covered everything but personal spending and snacks and so forth. And when I talk about everything, it covers the airfare, it covers where we stay, it covers our transportation while we're there, it covers our taxes getting in and out of the nation, and their taxes are going very, very high. It covers paying for a house that we rent for the Jamaican brethren to be able to come from other parts of the island and work with us. It feeds the Jamaica brethren. It pays for the tent being put up, for the chairs being rented for the tent, and just a number of other things. And so that's an economical thing. There are a lot of people that could go there that might not be able to go anywhere else. The advantage of easy accessibility to the U.S. I've already mentioned that some of you may not want to go that far. Well, you see, even if you want to go somewhere else and you're a little afraid, you could go to Jamaica and have that as your starting point. And that's what we'd encourage you to do. We had three new members to our team this year. One of them was 16 years old. And we normally don't like 16-year-olds going with us. And we don't always accept 16-year-olds. But if they're recommended very highly by the ones who know them and they're mature enough to do the work, then we let them go. And then one of the other newer members was 72. That's quite a range, isn't it? 16 to 72. And Tom Newberry, some of you may know him. He's in the audience. He's the one that's 72. He might not want me to tell you his age. But he got over there, and he did better than a lot of the younger people that kept being concerned about when they found out he was 72. Oh, some of them were so concerned. Oh, is he going to stand the heat? Is he going to do this? He took it better than any of them did. So the point being is that age is not really a factor. As long as one loves the truth, as long as one is willing to go by the rules of the team, and there are certain rules that we go by, as long as one is willing to go over there and do the work and not think of it as a vacation, then you're welcome to consider going. And I might point out here, too, on the team that I'm involved with, we give out a questionnaire. Now, there are a lot of people who don't like that. But everybody that is interested in going has to go by us asking you to go with us. Because there are so many things that are going on today, there are so many falsehoods that are being taught that we just don't let anybody and everybody go. They have to answer the questionnaire. If they answer that questionnaire properly, then we invite them to go with us. That'd be true of you as well. No one gets by without filling out the questionnaire. And if there are some things that we question concerning those, then we call that individual, we discuss it with them. If they misunderstood the question, we can clear that up. But no one goes without being invited. And that goes, by the way, for those who have gone for 10 years as well. I fill out one of those questionnaires every year because I can change just like everybody else. And so it is something that we want to make sure that we have sound brethren going with us. You might ask, well, what are the Jamaican people like? Well, the Jamaican people are of a lot of people over a period of time. Their motto is, out of many, one people. And so they're a melting pot nation, as it were. People that have come from many nations over the years, and so they've melted together. They more or less lost their own identities, and they've become Jamaicans. And so there are many shades of color, though most are dark-skinned, and there are many personalities. There are some good and there are some bad, but primarily the Jamaicans are very loving people that are very kind and very courteous. And I never have felt fear on that island concerning the Jamaican brethren. The fear that I feel is when the Americans are driving on the left side of the road on the roads over there. And by the way, Richard has gone over there with us several times. And there is a particular place over there that if any of you ever go with us and we go in that direction, I'll show you Richard's curve. That's where we became fearful, Richard driving around that curve. It's even on the map, not the national map, but on our map. Richard's curve. And so the people are great. The people are lovely. And the people are honest, most of them. And when we think about the church, of course, I think it would be good for us to consider the history of the church in Jamaica. And there's not a whole lot that I know about it, but I'll give you a little bit so that you might have an idea. The beginning of the church in Jamaica started out really bad because it started out with brethren who were going away from the truth with the missionary society. They sent a man by the name of J.O. Birdsley in 1857, and they saw Jamaica as a stepping stone to the continent of Africa. And that had limited success, but because of various things, they didn't get very far with it. And then in the 1930s, a man by the name of Luke Douglas Elliott did work in St. Catherine. But her growth really began to take place in the late 1950s and early 60s. J.T. Marlin and Roy Lanier Jr. began conducting campaign work. They'd go over like I do. They'd go over for a couple of weeks and then come back. They might go over longer. But during that time, they were able to convert 10 Christian church preachers, some of them which are that I know today and work with from time to time today, faithful men that are now older and probably won't have many years left. But because of this work and these men, the church really began to grow in Jamaica. In 1966 and 67, several men from the U.S. moved to the island of Jamaica and began to do work there. In 1970, the Kingston School of Preaching was organized by Ken Dye and Carl Maples. And you all are familiar with the Pearl Street congregation in Denton, Texas. That particular congregation was one who had a lot to do with keeping that school going, keeping it operational. And then Gladwin Cadu, a native Jamaican, became the director of the Jamaica School of Preaching in 1980 and is still the director. The school is still going on a good basis. The East Tallahassee, Alabama, and the Mount Dora, Florida congregations became very active in Jamaica in the 70s and began to have a lot of campaigns. I became active in the campaigns in Jamaica when Barry Hatcher, I don't know if you know him, he preached for a while in Redwater, Texas, so some of you may. Barry began taking teams over there began going over there with East Tallahassee. That particular eldership asked him if he would lead a team, and so he got me involved in that work. And then later we began to work under the eldership at Pearl Street, and now we're working under an eldership at Mount Hebron in Eclectic, Alabama. Concerning the church there in Jamaica, she has strengths and she has weaknesses, just like any congregation, just like any nation concerning the church. And so I'll just very briefly mention a few of them. Some of her strengths. As of November 1993, there were 58 congregations of God's people on the island of Jamaica. Most of them are very small, but you have to keep in mind, if you knew at all, that Jamaica generally does not have the transportation we have. The roads are just about getting non-existent in some places. The side roads are just hard to get down at all, and even the major roads in the last 2 years deteriorated to the point that some of them, if they continue to deteriorate as they are, the vehicles they have are not going to be able to get down it. The vast majority of the brethren are desirous of learning the truth, and I'm convinced of this. There are some that are not. We'll always find that. There are some that are not wanting to learn the truth, but I am totally convinced that the majority of the brethren want to know the truth, and when they know the truth, they want to be faithful to it. And when you can work with brethren like that, then it makes a great work. And so even when we don't have a lot of baptisms, and you can go over there and work with brethren who want the church to be strong, then it does a lot of good. And I would encourage you to think about that and maybe think about going with us. There are sound brethren teaching future generations. One of the things that was done in the beginning, and I think this took some wisdom on the part of those who made these decisions, is that there would not be primarily Americans getting support and going to live over in Jamaica. Nothing wrong with them going over to live. But the idea was, let's train the Jamaican brethren and let them do the work. Because, as was mentioned earlier this week, a lot of times when men come to the States to go to school, they don't want to go back. And I can understand that. I can understand it very well. Just going over there 2 weeks, I'm ready to get back, even though I love the work, because of the way that we're so pampered and the things that we have of a physical nature. So I can understand people doing that. And so that was a good move, and now there are a number of faithful gospel preachers over there that while I'm here, since I only go 2 weeks, there's a limited amount of what I can do, but there are those who are there doing the work, and that's a great, great thing. What about some of her problems? Well, most, as I said, are honest. But as with any culture, there are those that are not honest. They're out for what they can get. And unfortunately, there are even those who are gospel preachers who, as far as I know, do not preach any error, but that's their attitude, get what I can get. There's a man by the name of Winston Bembridge that we work with a lot in Old Harbor, Jamaica, that I've appreciated he and his wife Dorothy more for this one reason than just about anything else, is that he never asked for anything. We give him a lot. And we give them a lot more because he doesn't try to get things from us. But a lot of times that's not the case. Another one of the problems is that there is a tendency to promote the pastor system, a tendency. Now, most congregations, as far as I know, don't stress that, but there is that tendency because the congregations are so small, there'll be maybe 5, 10, 15 members, very, very few men, and so he becomes, as it were, the pastor. And it's something they have to fight very much and we teach against. But the biggest problem I think we have there is what comes from here. Because it's not just sound brethren going over there. There are liberal brethren that are going over there. And half the time we're over there, we have to fight the things that they say and the things that they do. I have in my hand the easy-to-read New Testament. And just glancing through it, it's not worth having, but I don't remember what year in particular. But one of the young men that came to the tent we were studying with, he opened this up to read it, and I thought, what in the world is that? And so I got it and looked at it, and it was one. It has the name of the two preachers from the church who gave it to him. I traded a King James for it, and he didn't really want to do it, but he did, and I've kept that for that purpose. But most of the problems we have to deal with are from brethren who go over there and mess things up. And so we really would encourage as many faithful brethren to go over there and help us to fight the battles of denominationalism and all the battles of sin, but also the battles of our unfaithful brethren. But another one of the problems is that the people are very poor, and it is very difficult for them to survive. It has even gotten worse, Richard, gotten very much worse. In the last 2 years, it has gotten so much worse that everything, the exchange rate was $32 to one, 32 Jamaican to one American. That doesn't sound all that bad, but it was bad before. But this year, it gone up from 30 to 32 this year. But the worst part about it is everything is priced in American money. And so they get maybe $150 for a washing. Now, I'm talking about a lady that goes to somebody's house and washes their clothes and cleans their house and works all day doing this and gets $150 Jamaican. That's about the equivalent of $5 U.S. And then they had to go and get a loaf of bread. I don't know exactly how much it cost. We didn't buy any. But I would say it would cost between $150 and $250 for a loaf of bread. So how do these people live? It's very, very difficult. And therefore, it is hard for them sometimes to get their minds on spiritual things because they're working so hard to try to get the physical things of life. And so we try when we can to help them with those physical things, but there is so little that we can help them with. We don't have the money for it. I have always been amazed of how hard it is to raise money to go to Jamaica. It's even been harder since the doors of Russia and those areas have opened up because all the money's going over there. And again, I surely would not discourage that, but at the same time, there are many things we could do that we just don't have the money for. The efforts that we have made in Jamaica have been, like I say, over 10 years. I've been going on campaigns for 11 years, but 1 year we went to Alaska instead because of some problems that occurred that we could not correct before we went to Jamaica. And we really enjoyed Alaska, but we've enjoyed going back to Jamaica. And one of the things I really want to encourage you to do, there are not very many young people in here. Of course, you may all consider yourself young, but I'm talking about 16 to 20. But I'd like for you to encourage those who are younger. I'll never forget Barry Hatcher as long as I live and the good that he has done me because he encouraged me and kept on encouraging me to go to Jamaica. I was a graduate of the Memphis School of Preaching. You'd think somebody would go to a school that is like that and many of our other faithful schools of preaching that is real hard. You have to do intensive study. You'd think it'd build your courage and it'd build your self-esteem and you think you could do it. But I didn't think I could do it. I was teaching brethren here in the States, but I didn't think I could go to a foreign country. Barry would write and say, well, I need an answer, and you can do it, and you can do it, and he'd call, you can do it, come on, go with me. He had confidence in me I didn't have. If he had not continued to encourage me the way he did, I would have never gone to Jamaica. I would have never experienced the joy of being able to teach those people and the joy of them obeying the gospel. I would have never been in the position to be able to speak to you about this great work today because I was too afraid to go. I didn't think that I could go. So please, encourage young people. I think that's one of the failures that we who are older have in the church today. So many of our young people don't have any idea about mission work. That's why this lectureship is here. But how many young people have you seen here this week? Not that many, really. And so maybe we can take the time and use that time wisely in encouraging them Yes, it is hard sometimes to go, but there are those who need to encourage those young people. The first year that I went was 1984. Eight of us went to a place called Ferry Hill, a small rural area. We held 147 Bible studies and baptized six. Several others were baptized after we returned home. And brethren, my appetite was whetted. I wanted to go again. And that kind of reminds me of Jeremy Northrup. Jeremy went with us this year, Chuck's son. After we were home from Jamaica, we'd been home about 2 weeks, he came over to the house. He said, I've already got my 2 weeks off for next year. Now you think of the encouragement that gives me when a young man goes over there for his first campaign, he comes back and says, I'm ready to go again. I've already got my time off from work. I've already talked to my boss. That's the encouragement we need to give our young people. Now, he'll probably go somewhere else in a few years, but he loves Jamaica now. And he saw the efforts, and he was amazed at it. This year, as I said, we had three baptisms and two restorations. We had 124 Bible studies, and there were nine of us. And so when you think about that, again, it's not very high numbers. And most people want to look at the baptisms and the restorations. But what about those 124 that were willing to study? Oh, I know a lot of them didn't obey the gospel. Most of them didn't. That's going to be true almost all the time. But the fact still remains, they heard the truth. I know they heard the truth. And therefore, when they stand before God, if I don't ever get to study with them again, if none of the other team members get to study with them again, what's going to happen? They're going to stand before God having had the opportunity that they didn't have before. And that's what God expects of us. Just to give you some numbers, since most people like them, in the years that we've been going, we've had 2,173 Bible studies. We've had 77 baptisms and 17 restorations. So that's 2,173 people who have learned the truth. Maybe not people, because sometimes it's more than one study with each individual. But we've had that many times that we've studied with people. And so they've heard the truth, and they therefore are in a position to where they can accept it or reject it. What are some of the things you need to know? And this is what Jack indicated to me he wanted. In case some of you are interested in going to Jamaica, maybe you couldn't go when the team that I'm involved in goes, and there's another team that you could go with, or you wanted to develop your own team, which would be fine. What are some of the things you'd need to know? I imagine a lot of these would be the same in any country that you'd go to. But I'll go over them anyway. First of all, you need to know your host. Now, some countries and some situations, you may not know anybody, and so you go on your own and you select a place, you contact some people, and you set up a study. But every time that I have been, we have known some people over there. We find out who they are. We work with them in some capacity. And so what they will ask when you get on the plane, they'll give you a piece of paper, and you have to fill out where you're going to stay and all these types of things. And so know your host, know where you're going to stay, and be ready to fill that out. Concerning Bible studies, even in the United States, every situation is different, isn't it? We have to be ready for just about anything. And this is true in Jamaica as well. So I want to give you some thoughts on specifics of teaching, and I want to then bring that together at the end of these thoughts and want you to notice something that is not really peculiar, but sometimes people don't think about because they think of Jamaicans being so different. You need to always spiritually prepare yourself through Bible study and prayer. You need to always have a plan of Bible study. And that plan of Bible study can be your own in most situations, or it can be one that someone has devised and you have bought. We, on this particular team, have developed our own Bible study. It's called Back to the Bible in Jamaica, and it's very, very good Bible study in that it covers the basics that they need in order to get from this point to that point in the shortest period of time and teach them as much as possible. You need to always maintain a positive atmosphere in the study. You need to know God's truth on a number of matters, such as the doctrine of heaven and hell and the soul of man, the abolition of the Ten Commandment law. Many Jamaicans still keep the Sabbath day, and they're not Seventh-day Adventists, though there are a lot of Seventh-day Adventists there. If you ever go to Jamaica, know about the Seventh-day Adventist doctrine and the abolition of the Ten Commandment law. Need to recognize and understand very clearly and be able to teach that mechanical instruments of music are not acceptable in God's worship. The Jamaican people are what we call jivey. They like to move. They like the sound, and they don't want to give it up. And so you have to be willing to know and to teach that without any doubt. Need to know what the Bible teaches on adultery and fornication, because that is a problem in Jamaica. The marriage laws are such that most people don't get married, or at least many of them don't, because of various customs as well as maybe certain laws. They just live together. There are a lot of men who don't have jobs, but the ones who do will go to a woman and will say, well, I'll give you this and that, or you can live with me, or I'll give you a house to live in if you will so-and-so. You know what I'm talking about. And it's amazing. 12, 13, 14 years and up. And so that's one of the major problems we have to deal with. And you cannot fidget when it comes to that. You've got to know the truth on it, and you've got to be willing to teach the truth on it. And the thing is they know that it's wrong. We have a little card that we fill out all the time, and it has M, S, and L. Married, single, or living together. And so what we ask, are you married? No. Are you single? Yes. Do you have a man, or do you have a woman? That's the way we put it. They'll smile, and they'll, yes, most of the time. Now, a lot of our brethren would go over there and probably say, well, you don't need to teach them that. Just teach them what to do to be baptized, and then teach them that later. What we do is teach them the truth. They recognize that they cannot obey the gospel living in sin. Therefore, they many times will not obey the gospel. They understand it, but they're not willing to give that up. But we have had the situation in which there have been at least two, maybe three weddings in these years in which people have learned the truth. We've studied, been able to study with both of those people. They recognized they could not have salvation living in sin. Therefore, they were married. And then we baptized them. And that's a joy when you can do that. Because they have that union that they should have, and they have salvation that they could not have staying in that situation. Need to always, in Jamaica, understand that the prospect may have ulterior motives. He might expect you to give him or her something. And that happens more times than you think. You have to be very perceptive on these things. And not everyone wants a favor, and not everyone who wants a favor is insincere. But so many people will do that. Now, I believe Richard was with us. He may not have been the 1 year that Janine Underwood was holding a child under the tent. And all of a sudden, we hear see this Christian lady take off under the tent running. She runs down the road and is pulling this woman back. You know who it was? It was the mother of this child. She was going to leave, hoping Janine would take that child back home with her. And we have a response, well, that mother just didn't love her child. Yes, she loved her child. Same thing happened this year, by the way, Richard. Someone tried to do that. What it is they have no hope. Under that system, they just don't see how their children are ever going to be able to have anything, and therefore they would rather give up their children and have that child brought over here and given the niceties of life than they would to keep that child in that situation. And so there are a lot of things we have to be very perceptive about. And the main thing we really encourage our team members to do is keep the discussion on a spiritual plane. It can get very dangerous in a lot of ways if you begin to talk about other things and they begin asking certain things and you begin to promising things because they believe that a promise is sacred. As a matter of fact, they believe and have believed for years that if you say I might as an American, that is like swearing on a stack of Bibles that you're going to do it. And that's hard to get Americans to understand. You don't promise anything. You don't even encourage anything that you're not going to do because they don't understand it that way, or at least many of them don't. While the average Jamaican knows far more about the Bible than the average American, and you'll find this to be true if you go over there, they don't know how to rightly divide the word of truth. And so there are a number of things you need to be ready to be able to help them divide. And I'm going to just read down a list here of those things and then make that point that I said I was going to make after that list a while ago. Some of the things that you're going to have to understand in principle and be able to teach is that Moses' law in its entirety has been abolished. That the New Testament is the covenant under which we now live. That God has extended His grace through Jesus Christ. That proper faith in Christ demands reverence and obedience. They have to understand that saving faith includes repentance, confession, and baptism for the remission of sins. A lot of people don't understand that. And then, of course, Jesus built one and only one church, and the saved are added to it. That denominationalism stands opposed to the church of the Bible. That worship is to be practiced in regular public meetings. That worship consists of the various acts of worship, and that has to be divided properly because you have all these denominations over there that are confusing people. They have to understand that the Bible is not the complete Word of God, which tolerates no additions or subtractions. Now, from that list of 10 things and the other short list that I gave, what's the difference in the Jamaicans and their need and the Americans and our need? Not a thing. You see, a lot of times people think, well, you go over to Jamaica, they need so many other things. Well, they do physically. But spiritually, they need to learn the same things that you and I have learned. And that's all we're trying to do, is we're trying to take them those things. Now, one thing we need to caution you about, when you go to Jamaica, things will be a lot different. But from what I have understood in talking to people who are much older than I, and therefore were members of the church much longer than I, maybe back in the 40s and 50s, that's about where Jamaica is right now, even in their understanding. They don't understand some of the basic things we understand because they're still growing to that point. And we need faithful men and women who will go over there and do that. What are the worship services like? Well, you can expect the worship services to be noisier than they are right now or any other time in most places where the worship is carried on in the United States. People talk. A lot of times they may debate with the preacher amongst one another. They won't necessarily interrupt the preacher, but they'll start debating amongst one another. They'll be asking questions of one another. There are certain things that I don't think are unscriptural that I'd rather not see simply because of my judgment, but it's not for me to go over there and tell them they can't do those things. Now, if it's unscriptural, that's a different thing. But I'm talking about judgment matters in which I really can't say. But it's going to be a little different, and it's something that you have to be ready for. Some Jamaicans have memorized large portions of the Scripture, and you'll be surprised that they'll begin quoting out loud sometimes when the Scriptures are being read. They enjoy singing and will participate vigorously. They move around a lot. And though it is not so much true anymore in the places that we have been a lot, a lot of times children in particular will come up to particularly a white American because we look different and start rubbing your arm, start feeling of your hair, things that really kind of throw you the first time you're there. But it's just a different culture. They're not used to that. When you call it a prospect's home there in Jamaica, it is something that we really want to encourage you, if you ever go, that I want you to consider. Keep in mind that where there is an enclosure, and their enclosures are not a chain link fence like ours, there may be pieces of tin put together, it may be bamboo wired together or tied together, that you should never enter that place if it has some enclosure around it any more than anyone should enter your living room without being asked, because that's private property. If there's ever a tree there that has fruit on it, you can pick it, unless there's an enclosure around it, but that's private property. Jamaicans respond quickly to a clap or a hiss or getting a rock and knocking on the fence. And I have been amazed how they can hear my hiss. But they can be in the back of their house, and they'll hear my hiss, and they'll ask what I want. And I'll say, I'm here to study the Bible. May I come? And they'll generally say, come. It's just amazing. What about a Jamaican's feelings toward you? Well, the Jamaicans, as I've somewhat already indicated, not all of them, but to some degree think we're all powerful. And particularly all wealthy. They think we own the riches of the earth. And to a large degree we do. And compared to them we surely do. But it's hard for them to understand. And so they will try to do what they can to get from you. But there's another point before I close that I really want to stress in regard to the things that you need to understand if you're going to go to Jamaica and if you're going to be faithful in doing the work. Wear the right type of clothing. Anybody goes on our team, it's stressed. Wear the right type of clothing. We go on Saturdays, the only days we take off from the work there. It's market day and you can't get any studies. And so we take that as our tourist day. We go wherever we want to go. We can go into the tourist areas and they will say, you're a Christian, aren't you? Now I realize they don't really understand what a Christian is from the standpoint of a true Christian versus a denominationalist. But they say, you're a Christian, aren't you? Well, yeah, how do you know? Because you're wearing clothes. Because you're covering your body. You see these tourists come over there in tour boats. They go to the tourist areas. They wear no clothes hardly. And they spend money like it crazy, and it causes problems for us. But they are wise enough to recognize that, hey, if you're a Christian, you're supposed to be clothed. And so don't be one of those that goes over there and has the attitude that I'm going to go and wear my shorts. Of course, you shouldn't be wearing them here either, but a lot of people do. That I'm going to go in a way that is not right and so forth. If you go to Jamaica, you don't need a visa. And you don't have to have a passport. All you have to have, you can't have a passport, make it easier, but all you have to have is a current voter's registration card and a valid driver's license, or a certified birth certificate and a valid driver's license. The food and the water, unlike India, unlike a lot of other places, can be eaten and can be, drunk or drank, whichever way you say it, without any harm. Never gotten sick from the food, never gotten sick from the water, and so that's something you don't have to consider. That is another one of those benefits that you can go and enjoy that maybe for the first time. One other real quick caution, and that is that if you're a hunter, make sure if you go to Jamaica, do not take any type of firearm or ammunition, live or spent. Because if you take, they find even a spent shell in your bag, they have the right to put you in gun court. Gun court, if it has not changed, is a situation in which they put you there. There is no time limit. There is nothing anybody can do. They could leave you there for the rest of your life if they want to, until they decide they want to try you for that. It is against the law to have any type of thing, though there are people over there that have them. It is against the law, and if any American is caught with it, then surely we're in trouble. And then one other thing I meant to say a while ago that I passed up. Young ladies need to be warned not to wear ankle bracelets. Because in Jamaica, unless it has changed, and I've not heard if it has, for a woman to wear an ankle bracelet is to advertise herself as a prostitute. And so little things like that may not seem like a lot, but they are. I wouldn't want my daughter or my wife going over there wearing something that she's used to wearing over here and it be advertising herself as a prostitute. So there are other things that I could say, but I appreciate the opportunity to be here to talk about this. I hope it has been something that has been beneficial to you. But regardless of what works go on and regardless of where your interest lies, we would encourage you that if you're faithful and you want to do work and you only have maybe a couple of weeks out of the year, and consider going to Jamaica with us. It is a great work, and you'll always be glad that you went. Thank you.